G'day, Dons fans. Heart rates have slowly returned to normal following Essendon's 3-point victory over the Crows in Friday Night Football. We tick off our first set of back-to-back wins for 2024 and our first win interstate. The focus now turns to the biggest home and away game of the season on one of our nation's most important days. I'm Jonathan Walsh, and Ian Hume joins me in the Don the Stat studio to preview our Round 7 clash against Collingwood. Humey, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. The heart rate alerts from the Apple Watch have finally died down after that hectic finish against the Crows, and now I'm super excited for the biggest home and away game of the year against the Pies. How about yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm glad your heart rate and all of our heart rates have calmed down because I get a bit of a sense they're going to be elevated a fair bit tomorrow. But yeah, I'm going well, mate. It's been a busy week, short week, obviously, with the holiday tomorrow. And also, I snuck in a day's annual leave on Friday. So yeah, lots of work to do in 3 days. But yeah, mine's fully focused on Anzac Day and commemorating and then heading along to the G and going to the footy.
Yeah, good stuff. Look, before we start tonight, as we announced the other week, we've got the live show coming up prior to the GWS game. And so far, there's been a really great take-up of tickets for that live show. It does help that we've been winning, so I think it's easier to sell that sort of thing when you have a positive win rate as opposed to a negative win rate. We're in real planning mode for what we're going to be doing in our segment and really looking forward to presenting it to everyone on the day. Also really excited to see what the Lunchtime Catch-Up and Flight Plan boys are organising, and there might even be a player appearance or two. There's a few talks there and things are looking good for that at the moment. If you want to guarantee your spot to that, you should get in fast. Tickets are only $15. It can be purchased from the link in the description of this episode.
Yeah, it should be a ripper of a show, mate. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, we've got some exciting things planned, which I think are going to be, really resonate well and with those that are in attendance. And yeah, like you, also looking forward to seeing what the other guys come up with. Should be fun. So yeah, tickets are selling pretty quick, actually. There's still plenty left, but yeah, I wouldn't wait too long because it looks like at this stage it's going to be a sellout. So yeah, get in and snap up your tickets.
Absolutely. And as always, we always like to thank our new patrons of the week. And this week, that's Charles Dean Antwiel, James Campbell, Joe, Stephen Ems, Lee Rosalind, Esther and Matthew Coughlin, Dave, HJW, and Joshua Stadnick. Thanks so much for signing up this week. And this week on the Patreon, you actually put out a really great video highlighting what's changed in our defensive structures, particularly forward of centre, between last year and this year, and that was really well received then. If that's something you're interested in checking out, there is a 7-day free trial to the Patreon, which you can try before you buy, so you can get a taste of what we're doing over there.
Yeah, one of the benefits of a Friday night game was I had some downtime on the weekend to put that together. It's something I've been wanting to do for a little while and finally got around to it. So yeah, it was good to put that up and you're right, the feedback was great. So thank you to everyone who commented and thanks again to all of our subscribers, new and old, and everyone in between. The Stat community just keeps getting bigger and the conversations throughout the week and on game day have been a lot of fun as well. We sort of bypass some of the hyperbole that you see on social media and we talk a little bit more about the real things that are happening on game day and the various matchups and tactics that are taking place. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Well, look, let's get into the review against Adelaide. And it was our seventh win on the trot against the Crows and one of the most satisfying, especially due to the game style we demonstrated for most of the evening.
Yeah, it was, mate. Just to pause there for a second before you get too deep into the preamble. How strange is it to be on that other side of that ledger? We ticked off the Tigers last year. They had a long streak against us, but it's actually our third active streak against, or third longest active streak against any team. We've won our last 10 against North Melbourne, which is our biggest streak at the moment. We haven't lost to the Gold Coast in our last eight outings, but there was a draw in the middle. And then we've lost our last eight to Port Adelaide and six to Geelong. So yeah, to be +7 against the Crows is yeah, a real positive, particularly given we've had to win over there in, I think, three of those. So yeah, it's really nice to be on that side of the ledger.
Yeah, and especially with the win we just had on the weekend, it was not only the fact that we won, but the way we won that was really pleasing. And it was built so much on forward pressure, especially for the first quarter and a half. It was 16-6 inside 50s in the first quarter, and then 17-10 in the second quarter. And most of that, the Adelaide 10, came sort of in the last half of that quarter. And that was accompanied by 12 tackles in the first half inside 50. And that's our average for a game across the year so far. Stringer alone had four in the opening half. And look, even though we weren't getting it done on the scoreboard, you could really feel just how dominant the Bombers were. It was as good a demonstration of what the Bombers are trying to do under Brad Scott, even if the goals weren't always coming.
Yeah, that's right. It was Essendon game plan in 2024, albeit the finishing was demonstrated there for everyone to see. That's what good is meant to look like. If you close your eyes to the scoreboard for a moment, and let's be honest, you know, a lot of what we're looking for in 2024 isn't so much just about scoreboard and wins and losses, but it's seeing a sustainable brand of football develop and start to stand up. And I think we saw our best example of that against the Crows on Friday night.
Yeah. And as you touched on the scoreboard aspect of it, and if you were going to have a complaint about that first portion of the game, it was their inability to turn the dominance into goals. And I think part of that comes down to the fact that given we're looking to play a forward half game, we're probably going to end up with a fairly congested forward line as the opposition looks to defend with numbers. And when they start doing that, it becomes hard to find a clear target. So you're relying on someone taking a contested mark or a good crumbing effort to put a score on the board. And I know a lot of people were frustrated with our goal kicking, especially coming off a couple of really good weeks of goal kicking where we were fairly accurate. But we also didn't get many easy looks at it. And that was part of the reason for our inaccuracy. And that's also reflected in the expected score metric. So even with the amount of shots we took, the locations we took them and the pressures players were under when they took them, on average, we've only scored 86 points from those shots, meaning we were below par somewhat, but only by 8 points. So even though we had a high amount of scoring shots, they weren't very high percentage scoring shots. You know, we can point to Sam Draper's miss in the fourth quarter as one of the big misses that should have been kicked. But most of the other shots were, you know, we get a mark, you know, 40 out, you know, towards the boundary line because that's where the space was being left by Adelaide, and we have a shot and we miss that. I think that's part of the reason what the inaccuracy comes down to, and it is something we'll have to be concerned about if we want to play this forward half game. We're going to have to find ways to score more easily, but hopefully the return of Peter Wright and the continual improvement of Harry Jones mean we can get those contested marks in the forward line, and that should hopefully allow us to get better looks at goal.
Yeah, we got asked a really good question related to this in our Patreon chat early in the week. And the question, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but is it, do we need to shift our expectations on certain metrics based on how we're aiming to play the game? And yeah, really, really good question. I think if we separate inaccuracy in front of goal from inside 50 efficiency at the moment, so, you know, how many of our shots or what percentage of our shots at goal end up being goals, being our accuracy or inaccuracy in front of goal, and then what percentage of our inside 50s end up in scoring shots, i.e. inside 50 efficiency. Accuracy this season is at 51%, which is seventh in the AFL. It was just under 54% going into the game against the Crows, which is the fourth best in the AFL. So our goal-kicking accuracy has been a big positive for us this year. Wasn't so good against the Crows. In playing a forward half game, the net result should be that we see an increase in how many inside 50s we have. 62 was the third most we've had in a game under Brad Scott, and that's two better. The two better that we've had under Brad Scott were round one last year against the Hawks and round 20 last year against the Swans. So yeah, best this year and the third best that we've had under Brad Scott. And then we want to see a decrease in the number of opposition inside 50s, and 43 is four better than the next best result we've had under Brad Scott. We conceded 47 twice last year, again in that game against the Swans and then in North Melbourne in round 22. So it was our best result under Brad Scott in terms of restricting the opposition's entries inside 50. You touched on it. I do think we can expect to see our inside 50 efficiency, i.e. our conversion rate of entries into scores, come down until we see our forwards adapt to play in more congestion. For a lot of the Brad Scott tenure, our forward line has been pretty open, and that's been a byproduct of sort of defending from the back and then looking to sort of slingshot. That won't be the case when you get as many repeat entries as last week. I do think that this is a case of it just getting a bit worse before it gets better as we learn to adapt and adjust to it. Draper and Goldstein only took one mark each. That didn't help. Both of those are in the last quarter. I do think this will get better under Peter Wright, as he tends to lead at the ball rather than want it at his head, as Draper and Goldstein typically do, just sort of stand there, put their hand up, draw a bit of a crowd. All that said, though, I think it's the lesser of two evils at the moment. The big tick is that we've maintained our game style for a longer period of the game, and it was the difference between us winning and losing ultimately. We won seven turnovers in our forward 50, which equals the seven we had against the Bulldogs as our best for season 2024. And we won 25 turnovers in our attacking half of the midfield, which is the most we've had this season and only the second time in our six games that we've had more than 20. We had 23 points from chains that started in our forward 50, which was three more than our previous best this season, and 31 points from chains that started in our forward half of the midfield, which was our equal best with with round one against Hawthorn. And it should be noted, against the Crows, that 30 points was 4-6. So we had 10 scoring shots from chains that started between our 50-meter line and the center circle, which, yeah, is, again, to go back to the point we raised earlier, that's Essendon, game plan, game style, system in 2024.
Yeah, and again, just to add context to the lack of good shots inside forward 50. We only took seven inside 50 marks for the match, and that's down on our yearly average of 11. Even compared to that, the Crows only managed four for the game. And so, yes, we had inside 50 dominance, but even with the congestion, our ratio of one mark per 8.9 entries was better than the Crows' one every 10.8 entries. And because of the way the game was being played, the Crows often had a far more open forward line to deliver the ball to, and you would expect a better ratio of marks from that. So I think that's maybe suggests it was a harder marking night than it may have looked at on the TV, at least from where I was watching. And it also, says good things about how we defended, even though their forward line was much more open than ours was.
Yeah, I thought our defenders were exceptional. To only give up four inside 50 marks for the game is a pretty good result, or it's an outstanding result that despite the Crows having limited inside 50s. We only lost four defensive one-on-one contests for the game, and that was from 11 one-on-one contests. So, pretty reasonable conversion rate there. Laverde and Kelly both lost one of their three one-on-ones. Redmond and Goldstein were the other two to lose a one-on-one. So in the defensive half of our ground. So, yeah, they really held up. And then it was our defenders who were doing the intercepting. Mackay had nine for the game, Laverde eight. They were our top two. And then Martin and McGrath, along with Parrish, were next with seven. Redmond, Kelly, and Heppel next best with five. So, of the top sort of six or seven interceptors, six of them, I think six of the seven there were defenders. So, yeah, really good outcome. And they did a really good job helping us to intercept the ball. Mackay, Laverde, Redmond, and Kelly all took two intercept marks each as well. So, yeah, I thought our defenders held up really well, mate.
Yeah, we did so much right. And I guess it's just a shame that given we were so dominant for particularly that first half, that it was our mistakes that let the Crows back in into the game, and that allowed them to get into the lead a couple of times in the game, and we fought back. And again, it's good to be able to fight back and hold on for a win. But it does show that we still have a ways to go to get things right in terms of execution of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I think the coaching group would love that, to be able to bank a win and instill the confidence in the players to say, look at the results of that effort and that work rate and what happens, when the game plan comes off to go into state and win against a team who, is fighting for a spot in the eight this year as we are. I think they would love that. And then they'd also love being able to pull the game apart and show the areas of improvement. It's a real win for our coaches. You're right. We gave the Crows momentum late in the second quarter through, the 50-meter penalty and Draper and then that really poor turnover by Laverde, which was a shame for him because he did defend really, really well and it did come from an intercept. But it was all unnecessary. It didn't need to play out that way. And then it just took us a while to wrestle that momentum back. But the good news in all of that is that we did respond. We didn't drop our bundle. We took the lead back and by three quarter time, we were in front and then we were able to help, hang on and win the game.
Absolutely. And one thing that I was really pleased with coming out of the game was just how much more comfortable Nick Martin looked playing that halfback role. I think the last 2 weeks, especially when we've been able to have the game on our own terms and playing that forward half games, it just showed how much damaging he can be playing off that halfback position. And how much of a benefit that can be as opposed to playing on the wing. And this week, Dersma, coming off three really good games in a row, he was barely sighted. It didn't have the same impact that he had previously. That's not to say he played a bad game. It's just it wasn't as impactful a game as he's played in the past couple of weeks. And that's not his fault as well. That can happen when you're playing on a wing. The game can bypass you quite easily. Whereas playing at half back allows Martin to see the field up ahead of him and work out much more easily how to get involved in the play and get dangerous more often. He's obviously still a work in progress there. When the game is played more in our back half, if you think back to the St Kilda game and, you got the high level of possessions, but you still wasn't quite sure, exactly how best to play that. I think definitely given what we've seen when the game style is working well and his role within that game style, I think it's an experiment that we really should persist with.
Yeah, it's winning me over, mate. I wasn't all that keen on it during preseason, but it's certainly winning me over with every week. I thought it was his most influential game of the season. I thought he was our second most influential player behind Zach Merritt. Turns out the coaches agreed. I think he got four votes in the coaches' votes as well. I genuinely think he's a better user of the ball with less time and less space, and that was the environment that was created through the way that we were playing on Friday night. He was getting the ball higher up the ground in more congestion, in more traffic. He thinks really fast. His instincts are really good. It's ultimately why I think he'll make it as an AFL midfielder. But in terms of his new position, the territory we held really suited him because he was operating in close confines. He had seven inside 50s, which is three more than his best this season. He only had more than seven once last year, and that was in round one against Hawthorn. So, it's certainly the new role hasn't restricted his ability to get up the ground and deliver the ball inside 50. He had six score involvements for the game, which is the most he's had this year. 722 metres gained, is second behind only that game. He had 40-odd disposals against the Saints. And for context, his next best this year was 579. So, yeah, he was really, really influential. He kicked that telling goal in the last quarter as well. So, yeah, I was really pleased with his game. Just on Dersma, you're right. The way the game was played, there was less transition from arc to arc than in previous weeks. There was only a combined 16 times to the match where either team took the ball from their defensive 50 to forward 50, and that's the fewest in an Essendon game this season. So yeah, it's hard to tell on the tally, but it also looked like they put some work into him. He was very good in finding pockets of space to hit up against the Bulldogs, but he looked to be well-worn against the Crows. So, I think a combination of maybe the Crows identifying that he was a player that was important to our transition, in Dersma, that is, and also just the way that the game was played didn't really, he wasn't required all that often. The ball wasn't sort of getting to him.
Yeah. Well, look, let's focus on that period post that Nick Martin goal that we talked about, and the last 10 minutes of the match and how we managed to hold on at the end. And, it wasn't all our own doing. We had a bit of help from the Crows, a couple of errors that their players made. And I think good on, as an aside, good on Josh Rochelli for coming out and owning that. I think that'll help him as a player, not going forward. But, Adelaide had nine of the last 11 inside 50s and were unable to kick a goal there. What did you notice about the way we defended the end of the game?
Yeah, well, all's well that ends well, right? We certainly had our share of luck in that game, as you said, and you probably need a bit of that, particularly in those close contests. But our pressure all throughout the night was outstanding, and that plays into the decision-making and execution of the opposition. We saw Davies run down tackle in that last quarter that caused Hinge to kick the ball out on the full. Those things play in the mind of other Adelaide Crows players when they're making decisions themselves. We saw Cox win that really important 2-on-1 where he sort of positioned himself between two Crows players and used his arms to get in front of them and then won his way to the ball. So again, that type of pressure and competitiveness really does play in the mind. We maintained possession when we could. There were a few moments where we did chip around a little bit and even conceded some territory, although the Crows did make that awfully difficult. And we otherwise looked to outnumber Adelaide at the contest and behind the ball. It was ugly. I don't think it was necessarily what we were aiming for at all times. It probably wasn't as executed quite as well as we would have liked. We would have liked to have been able to get the ball forward and lock it in our half of the ground rather than, trying to hang on from our defensive half. But what I liked most was that The actions looked to me like they were player led. It didn't appear to be a coach or a runner directive to go and get numbers back. We saw Langford go back. We saw Jones go back. We saw our mids and our ruck, and Draper made one of the worst attempts of all time to do it. But keep the ball in close and not allow it unnecessarily to get out into space. And I think that's just a genuine improvement in on-field leadership in those situations to what we've seen in the past. So wasn't pretty to the eye, but I think there's some things there that we can still take away as big positives.
Absolutely. Well, look, let's move on a little bit and just sort of consider where we sit at the moment. So, and this is coming off the back of all the Essendon is a different proposition this year articles starting up again, and that basically happened at the same time last year, because the same time last year we were also sitting at 4 wins and 2 losses after round six. Although at the same time last year we had a percentage of 120 compared to the just over 92% we have now. Based on what you've seen across the first 6 weeks of this year, what's different about the Bombers this year as opposed to last year?
Yeah, I still think we're, well, actually, short answer to your question is how we're trying to play. So last year, sit back, defend from the back half of the ground. We had Ridley in the side that really helped us to be able to do that as well, because he was a, he's one of the best intercept markers in the game, and he reads the play really, really well. Whereas this year, the intention has changed where we're a lot more competitive at the contest. There's more numbers at the contest, and we're aiming to get forward territory through that, and then lock the ball in our forward half. So fundamentally, we've changed how we're trying to play from a back half team to a front half team. I don't think we can genuinely answer, what's changed, truly changed, until after this week. I think, the reigning premier at the MCG in front of, 100,000 fans is going to give us another really good acid test, albeit we played them in the first 6 weeks last year, didn't we, with the season starting a little bit earlier this year. So, I think the biggest thing, mate, is just how we're trying to play. And that's not necessarily coming through in all of the numbers just yet. In 2023, we were 18th in the AFL for winning a clearance once the opposition won first possession. So if we conceded first possession, we were the worst in the AFL at being able to then dispossess the opposition, win it back through pressure, and then get a clearance ourselves. So it was basically we either won it, won first possession and won the clearance, or we lost it. It was kind of Russian roulette. There was no real competitiveness and pressure around the football. In 2024, we're second. So that's the second best at stripping the ball off the opposition if they win first possession at a stoppage, and then winning a clearance from it. That's the fundamental shift that then allows us to get territory and be a harder team to play against. Some of the other sort of statistical measures, we've seen marginal gain. So we've gone from, and I'm talking the first 6 rounds of last year, we've gone from -1.33 centre clearance differential and a +1.83 stoppage clearance differential to +1.33 at centre clearances and +2.33 in stoppage clearances. So, a sort of a 3 centre clearance a game turnaround and one or just under one in stoppage clearances. We're conceding 7 fewer marks and winning 3 more turnovers a game. Inside 50 tackles are up by 2.2. So all relatively raw numbers, minor changes, sorry, in those raw numbers. But inside 50 differential has improved from 14th based on what we averaged in 2023 relative to 2024 numbers. This year, we're 12th. So a little bit of an improvement. Keep in mind, we got smacked against the power in that regard. So yeah, I think there's some minor changes, mate, but the data size is pretty small, and I don't think we're yet seeing it in the numbers, but the eye, I think we can all see is how we're playing the game is fundamentally changing. Our challenge has been to maintain that for longer periods in games. We saw a good example of that against the Adelaide Crows. We've got another big test this week against Collingwood.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how those numbers look after we come up against the Pies. And look, coming up against the Pies at this time of the year, it always helps us to reflect on what a privilege it is to be involved in the Anzac Day game. And look, before we get on to looking at the matchup against the Pies, I thought we should take some time to really think about what the day means to the Essendon Football Club. And For those who are unaware, Anzac Day started as a commemoration of those Australians and New Zealand's loss during the Gallipoli campaign in 1915, but it's really expanded to become Australia's Day of Remembrance for all those killed during wartime. And look, due to their age and physical health, many sportsmen would sign up to serve in the armed forces in those days, some because they wanted to protect empire and country, some because they felt it was their duty, others because they wanted to serve with friends and family, whilst others signed up to see the world. So there's a wide range of reasons why people chose to go over and fight in these wars. And sportsmen, as again, due to their age and physical fitness, you know, they were prime candidates for the armed forces and prime candidates for, you know, frontline roles there. And as such, many were victims of the carnage wrought by war. And look, across the Boer War, the First World War and the Second World War, hundreds of footballers took part and many weren't able to make it home, whilst others were seriously injured and couldn't continue their football careers post-war, and then obviously had even more lifelong scars and problems because of what they went through in the war.
Yeah, my great-grandfather was one of those, mate. Hugh Calhoun, he played two games for the Saints prior to World War One, and unfortunately through the injuries he suffered at war, I mean, he was fortunate to come home. A lot of others weren't. He fought on the Western Front, but yeah, those injuries and most of them in his case were mental scars. I didn't have the fortune of meeting him. He was gone well before I came to the world. He passed away when he was in his 50s. But yeah, he didn't continue with his VFL career upon his return. Somewhat ironically, I think his second of his two games was a win against Essendon. So yeah, there has been a family member feature in a game. Against or an Essendon game, it just wasn't in the red and black. But you've done some research this week, mate, into Essendon players and or some of the Essendon players and their involvement in the war.
Yeah, so for the Essendon Football Club, 20 people who played for the Bombers at the highest level would lose their lives during war, across the Boer War, the First World War, and the Second World War. And three of those came in the Gallipoli campaign that established the Anzac Day that we have today. And I just want to touch on those three now, give you a bit of insight into them. One was Herb Hunter. He played three games for Essendon in the 1900 season. He was wounded in the Gallipoli trenches on the 8th of May, 1915. So then he was being carried back by stretcher bearers towards a hospital at the back of the lines. A Turkish shell landed nearby where he was being stretchered, and that killed him instantly. He was 33 years old, and prior to the war, he trained as a dentist, and he was also a champion runner. There's awards in Bendigo for athletics that are named after Herb Hunter. The next one to die in the Gallipoli campaign who played for Essendon was Dick Lowe, and he played one game in each of the 1907 and 1908 seasons, and he was killed on the 2nd of June when a gunshot hit his chest, and he was 31 years old. And the final Essendon player to die during the Gallipoli campaign was Chris Fogarty. He played two games for Essendon in 1906 before featuring in 26 games for the now defunct university between 1908 and 1910. He was killed by a Turkish shell on the 29th of November. And to add to the horror, it was his brother Joseph, who also played two games for Essendon in 1906. He was at Gallipoli as a doctor, and he was the one who had to identify Chris, and he could only identify him from his foot. They only found a piece of his foot, and there was a distinctive bunion on his foot that allowed his brother to identify him. So, you know, we focus a lot on the people who died, but the things that those who came back saw obviously would have really hurt them and scarred them for life. And yeah, I think those are just some really short snippets of stories of people whose lives were tragically cut short due to the war that are connected to the Essendon Football Club. And for me, it really strikes home how fortunate that we are to be living in a time where we aren't asked to make that sacrifice and living in a country that doesn't have to make that choice. There's people all around the world now who don't have the same choice or the same luck that we do in terms of not having to risk their lives in wartime. And I think it's just important to learn from these stories of these people and what we can take out of them and moving forward.
Yeah, that was really well said, mate. Thank you for looking into that and sharing those stories. It seems, you know, pretty trivial now to turn our attention towards a game of football, but I guess fundamentally that's what this podcast is about. So let's move on. We take on the Pies tomorrow, and you know, we get the good fortune of being able to attend that because of what's the guys that you just mentioned and hundreds of thousands like them did way back when. So yeah, let's take a look at the Pies, mate, and what they've been up to.
Yeah, look, after falling just short in 2022, the Pies did manage to go all the way in 2023, matching the Bombers and that other team that shall remain nameless with 16 premierships, finishing on top of the ladder with 18 wins and a percentage of 127. They had three close finals, but they ended up on the positive side of that ledger. Across the three finals they won, including the grand final, the total margin was only 12 points. So, they weren't an overly dominant team, but they won the games when they mattered, and that's what got them their premiership. This year, after a slow start, they lost their first three games to the Giants, the Swans, and the Saints. They've bounced back with three straight victories against their 2023 premiership or grand final opponents in the Lions, followed by the Hawks in Gather Round, and then a dominant win over the Power last weekend. And so they're currently sitting in 10th spot with a percentage of 97.6. So looking at some of their metrics that tell us how they play. In their premiership year, Collingwood were one of the highest handballing teams. They kicked only 1.38 times per handball, and that was the sixth lowest ratio in the competition. Now their ratio has increased to 1.41, but most of the competition have been kicking a lot more this season. So they actually, despite being a higher ratio than last year, it actually makes them the fourth lowest rate. So they're sticking with the handball game, whilst a lot of other teams are moving to more of a kicking style of game. So far this season, Collingwood have been giving up more inside 50s than they've been generating. So they're minus 1.67. And that's a drop from last year. Again, it's a small sample size at this point, but they were plus three in inside 50s across last year. As for their efficiency, they're ranked 17th for their efficiency going forward and 9th for their defensive efficiency. But that said, that their forward efficiency in their three wins has been 53.47, which is the fourth best of any side in their winning game. So the last 3 weeks, they've really worked out how their forward line and how they want to move the ball there. So yeah, their overall figure, I don't think naturally reflects where they're at. So in 2023, Collingwood were a side that relied heavily on intercepts to generate scores. However, so far this season, they've really improved their contested work, particularly at centre clearance. And last year, they broke even in the middle. While so far this year, they are the best centre clearance side in the league after six games. They're at plus 2.33 a game, as well as going plus four in contested possession, which is the fourth best in the league. So there's a little bit of what we're doing in there. They're wanting to win centre clearance now and get forward pressure on it and lock the ball in there. But they have regressed at stoppage somewhat. So they've dropped to minus 2.5 stoppage clearances a game compared to their opponents, as opposed to breaking even last year.
Yeah, I should have given you a breather in there, mate, but you're on a bit of a roll. Not sure what's come first here, whether, what's the chicken, what's the egg, whether it's due to Nathan Murphy's retirement causing a shift down back, albeit I think Frampton's, held up pretty well and played some good footy. Whether it's Lachlan Schultz's recruitment to the club and the dynamic that he brings, or whether it's just something they were, yeah, and whether it's just something they were looking to do regardless, just as part of their evolution and not wanting to sit still. But they've certainly been looking to play a bit more of a territory game this year. You mentioned the work that they're doing around clearances and the improvement there. We talked last year about how they had some similarities in how they defended to how we were attempting to, sitting back and defending from the back half a little bit more. They still have a tendency to do a little bit of that. We'll touch on that a little bit later. But it does seem that where they can win clearance, they're really focused on locking it in. They were 11th in the AFL in 2023 for scores from forward half chains. They're second so far in 2024. So that is a real shift for them. They're equal first with us for intercept marks in their own forward 50, and they're seventh for intercept marks in that forward half of the center of the ground. So yeah, there has been a bit of a shift there in how they're defending the ground, but I think it's also coming from their ability to win more clearances and therefore get more territory.
Yeah, and just sort of touching on marks, apart from intercept marks, and as you would expect from a side that likes to handball, they don't actually take a lot of marks in general play. They only average 79 a game, and that's the lowest average in the comp. And if you look at their wins, they're only averaging 74 marks per game in a win. And if you look at their marks in win versus their marks in losses, that no team has a bigger difference in marks taken between wins and losses, where losses is the lowest number. They really don't rely on a marking game to win games. In fact, they prefer the ball moving quicker not taking that time to stop with the marks. And that's also reflected in the way they have their handball game. And you can see with that handball ratio there. And again, you touched on earlier that the intercept game was really important last year, and they've also maintained a positive intercept differential. And the raw number has actually improved in terms of their differential from plus 1.5 last year to plus 3.3 this year. And just sort of reading into all that data, they're a team that likes to move the ball quickly by hand once they win it, back off their opposition, and they've added a stronger centre clearance game to their arsenal. And, three losses showed that they started a bit slowly, and that could be understandable given they had the shorter break coming off the grand final and the earlier start to the season. But their form does seem to be coming good right about when they're able to come up against us, and it does seem to happen a lot coming into Anzac Day.
Yeah, it does. I like that, though. Let's get a real look of where we're at by taking them on, when they're closer to their best. They've won their last three, so yeah, they certainly seem to have their mojo back. What has been interesting, mate, and it was a part of their game last year, is that they are prone to big momentum swings in games. Port kicked 6 of the first 7 goals against them last week, and then the Pies responded with 8 in a row. Collingwood kicked 5 of the first 6 against Brisbane before Brisbane kicked 4 in a row to peg them back. The Saints had a 5-goal and a 4-goal run against them. The Swans had a 6-goal and a 4-goal run against them. In fact, they only kicked 1 goal or only one of their 15 goals was unanswered before the Swans could add at least 2 more. So, of their 15 goals, 14 of them were kicked in runs of 3+. And the Giants had a 6-goal run against them this season as well. And so, yeah, they're a team, and we saw it last Anzac Day, didn't we, that they can give up scores when they don't have momentum, but they can also really hurt you when they do have it. So, yeah, that's a part of their game that hasn't changed this year. They're prone to giving up scores, goals on a run, but also really good at kicking goals on a run themselves. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting watch this week. We're still relatively early in the season, mate. What list changes did they make in the off-season?
Yeah, so I don't think good sides stand still. They're always looking to improve their list somewhat. And they traded out Premiership player Jack Ginnivan to Hawthorn, whilst Taylor Adams, who spent 10 years with the Pies before missing the grand final with a hamstring injury, he was traded to Sydney to join another former Pies player in Brodie Grundy. Both those players played significant parts in their 2023 campaign, with playing 14 and 23 games respectively. The Pies also delisted 6 others, and 4 of those, Kelly, Rusko, Wilson and Bianco, they featured in 5 games between them. So they haven't lost a whole lot of their core other than Adams and Ginnivan. The other players that they lost really didn't have much of an impact on their premiership year. And at least when it comes to Ginnivan, they've probably replaced him with probably an improvement in Lachie Schultz. He was their big acquisition in the offseason. They traded their first rounder from this year for him, and he's played all 6 games so far for 7 goals, but he seems to be coming into his own a little bit the last couple of rounds. Harry DiMattia and Tujath came in via the draft, whilst Will Parker made the move from cricket and was picked up as a Category B select rookie. None of those players are featured yet this year, and neither have their 3 SSP selections. Jack Bytel, formerly of St Kilda, Lachie Sullivan from Footscray's VFL side, and former Essendon Academy selection Josh Eyre.
Yeah, we'll see Lachie Schultz tomorrow, of course, and I think most listeners will be familiar with what he brings to their side. I think, best way to think of him, if you're not familiar, is just to sort of imagine Jade Gresham in black and white stripes, small forward, likes to get up the ground, get to contest, provides really good pressure, and then a pretty good finisher in front of goals. Lachie Sullivan is named as an emergency, so he's the other new addition, I guess, with some sort of chance of seeing tomorrow if they spring a late change. He's a mature age midfielder, picked up at 26 years of age. So, other than that, we're unlikely or we won't be seeing any of their new additions. Speaking of the teams, though, mate, let's take a look at selection, shall we?
Yeah, well, just touching on, normally we would touch on the previous game between the two sides, but that was such of a nothing game and neither side really cared about it, that I don't think there's much we can read into it. So, as you say, let's get into selection. And pretty straightforward for the Bombers this week. We heard early on that Peter Wright was coming back. And once Brad Scott said that Sam Draper was going to be selected, there was little doubt about who would come out there. And then they have gone sort of a last in, first out policy by having Elijah Sardis, who was the sub last week, come out. And he's one of the emergencies to go along with Nate Caddy and Matt Guelfi, who's coming back from injury there. So, look, interesting to see how they go with the much taller side. But yeah, they've obviously identified something where they want that height and to run the two rucks. So we'll see how that plays out on the day.
Yeah, look, it's great to have Peter right back. We went 3-1 whilst he was out, which is a really good result. I've got no doubt he makes us a better side. I think he'll help our forward line function better. Jones has been playing really well, and he'll now get a lesser opponent as a result of Wright coming back, as will then Langford and Stringer. So it has a real flow on effect to the rest of our forwards, which I think is great. Having a more mobile deep option will also alleviate some of the issues we had last week with congestion inside our forward 50. Clearly, with their two rucks, we've wanted to go head to head whilst not giving up our structure ahead of the ball. When, you know, if we went with the one ruck and Wright as our second ruck, we'd have to forfeit that advantage. And given the Pies have those two 200-centimeter key defenders in Moore and Frampton, I think it's a lot of this is about keeping them accountable and not allowing them to have a shorter matchup at any point in the game. I do worry that we're sacrificing some of that forward pressure that we had last week. You know, we can assume, I think, that Hind will end up being the sub again, given the changes. I think the sub rule, though, does give us the flexibility to change that up. If it's required, I guess we can, you know, we can take off a taller player and bring Hind on if we feel like we need that extra run on, you know, through the game.
And just on that forward pressure, yes, we've dropped a small for a tall, but Jake Stringer's been really good in that forward pressure role we touched on earlier. He had four inside 50 tackles against the Crows, and you know it feels a bit like an apex predator when he's chasing down people in the forward line, and that causes a lot of pressure there. Harry Jones, you know, for a tall man, you know, he's getting a lot of holding the ball decisions for his way in the forward 50, and you know, Gresham and Davey, you know, can play that role as well. And then Hobbs has been doing quite well in that role as well. So I don't think we're going to be lacking for forward pressure there. And as you say, when we can, you know, be a bit more tactical with the sub and bring them on to keep that forward pressure up there. And look, you know, all the talk about the height in our forward line, we spent a lot of time in our preview against the Power talking about how we're going to be able to take advantage of all the height that the Power had played with their four tall forwards, and it didn't really play out that way. So, you know, a lot of people concerned about the weather, but if the weather stays away and we can use that height to our advantage, it won't matter so much that we have picked them, and we could potentially, you know, you mentioned the two big defenders for Collingwood. If we've got three tall forwards down there, plus Stringer, plus Langford, then they're going to be some really difficult matchups and choices Collingwood's going to have to make.
Yeah, that's right. That's the plan, right? Is to keep their defenders accountable, make you know, the likes of Maynard and Quaynor have to be more accountable in their roles too, and potentially play a little bit taller. So it makes sense, and a lot of it's going to depend on what happens through the middle of the ground, doesn't it? We're going to look like geniuses, or Brad Scott's going to look like a genius if we get clearance and territory. If we don't, it might be a little bit difficult for us. So yeah, interesting to see how that all plays out. Onto the Pies, mate. They've made the one change as well. Harvey Harrison comes in, Reece McInnes goes out. McInnes, Lachlan Sullivan, who we've already mentioned, and 2023 Premiership player Oleg Markov, their emergencies. So whilst we've gone taller, they've gone smaller. I assume Harrison will be their sub. He was pick 52 in the 2021 draft. He kicked three goals in his four games last season, so he didn't play in his debut year. Played the four games last year. He's a 180-centimeter forward. He's got some real pace about him. He ran a 2.845 second 20-meter sprint at his draft camp or draft combine. His foot skills aren't great, but he does really love a tackle. So I guess some similar traits there with maybe a Nick Hind. We get the advantage of an extra day's break coming into this game. The Pies played against Port on Saturday, albeit they didn't have to travel. So, they've gone a little bit smaller, I guess.
Yeah. And just touching on that game, Collingwood 17-21, 123, defeated Port Adelaide 12-9, 81. And Coming off a bye, Collingwood did start sluggishly. They went down by 29 points early in the second quarter before they kicked 14 goals to four for the remainder of the game to run out rampant 42-point winners. And, you know, as we've touched on with their metrics, the Collingwood's win was built on their contested work. They were plus 41 in contested possessions, and they ended up winning the centre clearance by seven. And, you know, we got touched up by Port Centre Clearance Brigade a couple of weeks ago, and to see Collingwood do that to the same players was really impressive from them. And their defensive structures held up well. They generated 15 more intercepts than their opponent. As often happens for the Pies, Nick Dacos led the way. He had 30 disposals, 8 clearances, and 757 metres gained, and the latter two of those stats were the highest on the ground by any player, whilst Jordan De Goey had 27. Pat Lipinski kicked 4 goals for them, whilst Brody Miocek kicked 3.
Yeah, Port had the game on their terms for a lot of that first quarter and a half, which, you know, you touched on the way they got a jump on them. But once Collingwood got their turnover game going, they got back on top. So it was really their pressure at the contest that you know, overwhelmed Port in the end. It was 27 points to zero in Collingwood's favour in regards to scores from turnover in the second quarter, and 72 points to 38 for the game in terms of scores from turnover. So, yeah, that the heat that Collingwood were able to apply once they got themselves back into the game really did overwhelm Port in the end.
Yeah, and I guess watching that game, it was a bit worrying watching the Pies easily handle a team that demolished us a couple of weeks ago, and hopefully the results aren't cumulative and we go down by 110 points if you combine the margins between ours and the Power game and then the Collingwood, the Pies. And yeah, I'm hoping it works out much more like a Pokemon battle where Port is water, Collingwood is grass, and we're fire. Sort of a bit of a triangle there. I'll stop nerding out there for a second before we lose all our listeners.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with Pokemon, mate. So I think I get the concept though. So I get it. But can you burn water with fire? I'm not sure. Anyway, yeah, Collingwood did some things in that game that we did against Port, right? They made more of their opportunities early in the game, you know, so the first quarter and a half than we did, particularly after quarter time. You remember we had some opportunities to hit the scoreboard early in quarter two against Port. Well, Collingwood did, and that helped them to keep the game closer. And then once they got on top through the midfield, which we clearly didn't do, the game went the other way. It sort of opened up for them from there. They won centre clearances by seven, stoppage clearances. I think they were down by one or two, and then they won contested possession by 41, and that just allowed them to take territory and bring their small forwards into the game. And you know, they were able to withstand that longer than we did against them.
Yeah. Well, look, let's turn our attention to the match itself. And we haven't been able to crack the code against the Pies for a couple of years now, especially since Craig McRae took over, although we have been close on multiple occasions. And one thing that struck me about the Pies that we might be able to take advantage of is that both this year and last year, they've averaged over 100 marks against in matches they've lost. And we've shown that, you know, for the most part, even with the switch to that forward half game, we are a team that likes to control the ball in the air and take a fair few marks. It didn't work out that way in the Adelaide game, where we only took 70, and that was our lowest amount of marks in a winning game outside of the COVID year since 2018. And it does seem that the matches that Collingwood have lost across the past 2 years, that if you're able to play methodical, play keepings off, you can actually do really well against them. Do you think that's something that'll fit our side and is a way to approach the Collingwood game? If so, how can we accomplish that?
Yeah, even in their three wins, they've conceded more than 80 marks and been at a negative mark differential. They're 16th this season for marks differential at minus 11.8. We're 10th at minus 3.6. Frampton and Moore ranked 13th and 18th respectively for intercept marks per game. So they're, you know, right up in the top players in the competition. In that regard, the Pies are fifth in the AFL for total intercept marks and first in the AFL for intercept marks in their defensive half of centre, which is where Moore and Frampton really like to operate. I think the logic in keeping the two rucks despite bringing in Wright is it allows Wright to play a full game. You know, Peter Wright's super fit. He won't have missed a trick on the track. We have heard from Brad Scott how professional he is. So we would be banking on him to be playing, you know, close to 100% of game time. And that ensures that both Frampton and Moore are occupied in the air at, you know, for as long as possible throughout the 120 minutes of the game. It's likely we'll see Jones try and take his matchup up the ground a little bit more. And you know, obviously Wright Staying a little bit deeper and just trying to spread those two tall defenders. It's really important that we don't give them the ball back unnecessarily. We've been pretty good this year at competing in the air and bringing the ball to ground and then getting numbers to the contest. And that'll be critical again tomorrow. I do think we need to take more opportunities or more make more of our opportunities to control possession and find the leads that will come from Stringer and Langford, as well as the likes of Gresham and Hobbs. I think there's opportunities for them and Elwyn Davey Jr. as well to really pop up in some pockets of space, because what I do anticipate will happen if we can be more patient going inside 50 is that our talls will draw the crowds and our smalls will they don't have any other than perhaps Noble, they don't have any genuine lockdown hard small defenders. They do prefer to try and intercept and zone and help their talls. So I do think it creates some opportunities for our smaller guys, but we're going to have to be patient going inside 50 and not just bang the ball in unnecessarily. When we are caught under pressure though and do need to go long inside, it's important that we do bring it to ground as often as possible and we continue with that style of getting numbers there, causing stoppages or spillages and taking your opportunities that way.
Yeah. And I guess we touched the game, something we touched on earlier, the Pies have developed a much more of a centre clearance focus game. They've got three players this year who are averaging over two centre clearances a game in Dugowie, Dacos and Pendlebury. And last year only Dugowie was the only Pie that was able to average over two centre clearances a game. And they have a wider range of threats in the middle now. Dacos is featuring there a lot more. And, you know, they demolished a Port side that blitzed us at centre clearance 3 weeks ago. We limited the impact of a team that we thought we'd struggle against in centre clearance in the Bulldogs a couple of weeks ago. How can we do that again?
Yeah, we didn't have Sam Durham in that game against Port, and Setterfield was clearly playing injured. It wasn't a great night. Darcy Parrish was still impaired. So I think that puts us in a better position already. It's going to be another big week for Sam Durham and Caldwell. Something tells me that they'll rise to the challenge. I think those two are really starting to thrive off the connection that they're building together. And you know, I think the opportunity to do it on the biggest home and away stage that they have, arguably the biggest game of their careers so far, I think they'll really stand up. It's Dugowie and Dacos are the matchups that I'd give those two. Dugowie is an interesting one. So unlike, Bontempelli, or Dawson last week, who, start in the midfield and play as midfielders, or, in Bontempelli's case, not that he did against us, when he goes forward, he typically starts as a forward. Dugowie is one that starts in the midfield and then the majority of the time post the centre clearance will push forward a lot like what we saw of Jake Stringer back in 2021. He doesn't stay and play as a midfielder. He'll push forward, and more often than not, it's Crisp and sometimes Mitchell who are the two that typically receive that handover. So they start forward and come up and play in the midfield. I'm sending Jake Kelly to Hill. I'm getting McGrath then to pick up Dugowie on the way through. And some people might raise their eyebrows at that a little bit. If we think back to Dreamtime last year, McGrath did a really, really good job playing on Dustin Martin, who has similar sort of physical attributes to Dugowie. So I don't think it's a matchup that's going to concern Andy too much. I think he's got the power off the mark to be able to go with him. And I think he's better in the air than a lot of people give him credit for. So, you know, Durham starts with Dugowie at the centre bounce, but then after that transition, we obviously want and need Durham to stay in the midfield. So for me, McGrath picks him up on the way through. I do think in the chaos of that handover, if we manage it right, both Durham and McGrath have an opportunity to get really dangerous. McGrath off the back of the contest, because he'll be on an opponent who's not actually too concerned about where he is. He's more concerned with finding Dugowie and potentially finding Durham. And then Durham pushing forward if we win the ball, because Dugowie, some of you will have seen the clip of Rankin not going with Parrish last week. Rankin was looking to drop off and find his handover, which was Berry in that game, and Parrish kept pushing forward and took that mark and kicked that goal. Durham has the opportunity to do that on Dugowie as well. I think he can get dangerous. If we win the ball, he can get forward and create some headaches. Then it's stoppages. where it changes, and you don't typically see Dugowie do a lot of work as a midfielder at stoppages. He'll come up around the contest in the forward half, but not as a pure mid. I'm sending Durham to Tom Mitchell at those stoppages when he's on the ground. Mitchell is their number one stoppage clearance winner. He's not the player that he was when he won the Brownlow at Hawthorn, obviously, but he's still good in close. He's a good user by hand, and he helps get the ball out to their runners. I think Duz can beat into the ball, and I also think that he can hurt him the other way because Mitchell's defensive game isn't particularly strong. So I think for me, it's about getting that balance right of defending their best ball winners at stoppage and centre clearance, but then also how we can hurt them going the other way. And I think with Durham and Caldwell, we have an opportunity to do that. And then that also obviously frees up Zach and Parrish to do what they do best, and that is to spread and distribute and use the ball.
Yeah, and if we do get on top in those clearance stakes and we can employ our forward half game like we did against the Crows, what changes do we need to make in order to get a better outcome on the scoreboard this week?
Yeah, we touched on it earlier. Peter Wright really helps. It's important that we don't just anchor deep and that he gets on the move because he does draw a crowd. And then it's about lowering our eyes and being patient, something we weren't quite as good as we needed to be last week. But what we do know is, and we've touched on it already, is the Pies do concede more uncontested marks than, you know, most of our recent opponents. And I think we just need to use that to our advantage. They'll sit back a little bit. We need to hit up some of those sideways kicks, try and empty out the 50, and then look for pockets, and then convert well, and hit our set shots.
Yeah. And then finally, what aspects of our play do you see the Pies struggling with? What are they going to be concerned about going into tomorrow?
Yeah, I think a little bit of a risk of repeating myself here and rehashing what I mentioned last week, but we do have two genuine rucks. And we have a spread of genuine goal kickers. If we can get our share of clearances and contested ball and then bring our pressure game, then I do think we have the players in our forward line that can make the likes of Maynard and Quaynor to play more accountable than they typically like to. And I think if we can keep our midfield game simple, as it was against the Bulldogs, as it was against the Crows, where Collingwood like to create a little bit, play a little bit more chaos with handovers in there, then I think we can take advantage of that as well when we go forward.
Hopefully that is how it plays out on the day, mate. Well, look, I've started to ask our patrons for final thoughts now, so I don't have to worry about thinking them up. And our final thought this week comes from one of our inaugural patrons signed up on day one that was launched last year. And he was, in fact, the third person ever to sign up, and that's good friend of the show, Vince Taskunas. Vince states it'll be the matchups on the Collingwood forwards that'll be the key factor, and if we can break even on all of them, then we're a good chance of winning. Your thoughts on that, Jono?
Yeah, both teams have a spread of goal kickers with guys that are capable of, multiple guys who are capable of kicking three or more goals. Someone will and always pops up in these games, and you know, for Collingwood, you sort of see it most weeks as well. It was Lipinski for them last week who kicked four. I think we're growing, or I'm seeing a growing confidence in our back six. Mackay and Laverde kept Walker and Fogarty to a goal each last week. Kelly is really excelling in that lockdown defender role again that, you know, he was known for and we brought him to the club to do. Thought Redmond had his best game of 2024 last week and he's been getting better. He finished the Bulldogs game off really, really well and then was really good last week against the Crows. As long as they get help and support from our mids and forwards, I think we should have faith that our backs will hold up in their one-on-ones and in their respective matchups. This I do expect will be a game of momentum swings. We've touched on it already. It's a part of the Pies game all season. It's been happening in our games too. I think the key to us winning this, as obvious as it sounds, is hitting the scoreboard when we do have momentum. We didn't do that against Port. We didn't do it accurately enough against the Crows. We certainly had our shots, but we didn't convert enough into goals. So we need to be doing that. And then slowing them down when they have it and really working on slowing the game down when they do get a little bit of momentum, whether that's through repeat stoppages and throwing extra numbers at the contest, whether it's about adjusting and having a plus one behind the ball or just taking some control possession or a combination of both. When they do get two goals in a row, we need to be really switched on to avoiding letting that become three or four or five because that's typically the way that they like to play.
Well, look, that'll do us for this Anzac Eve show. Thanks again to everyone for their support of the Don the Stat community. Whether you listen, whether you interact with us on Twitter or Facebook, or whether you're a member of the Patreon, we appreciate all of you, as we always do. I'm super excited for tomorrow. Any final words for yourself, Jono?
Yeah, I mean, we don't often ask for favors, mate, but if you are getting a lot out of listening to the show and you are enjoying it, then you know, one of the great things that you could do for us is just to like and subscribe and give us a review on your podcast feed, particularly those Apple subscribers out there, but on all of the podcast apps if you can. Yeah, we'd really value and appreciate that. I can't wait for tomorrow, mate. It's a really special day. I'll be at my local dawn service in the morning with my grandfathers and great grandfathers and their mates, you know, deep in my thoughts. It's a great day for commemoration and you know, thinking about all the great, all the things that those people did for us that give us the great lives that we live today. And then obviously can't wait to get to the G, mate, and see how our lads account for themselves.
Yeah, me too. Well said, mate. Stay safe, everyone. Get your live show tickets and go Dons.